Raised by Soundfest is coming Saturday, December 7th. Go to raisedbysoundfest.com for more information.
A virtual reality art gallery and coffee and cocktail demos to continue highlighting the ever-growing coffee scene. All proceeds will benefit Protect Our Aquifer, because you can't have great coffee without great water. More information and tickets for sale at grindcitycoffee.com. Next to you, I'm so lonely and blue, and it's all because of you. I don't know what to do. All I can't get next to you, baby. I said, you and I are through. There's no more to do. I don't need no talking to.
This is Keith Daniel Cooper. You're listening to 91.7 FM, WYXR, Memphis.
Welcome to the Central to the Arts, your gateway to the vibrant world of creativity and innovation, brought to you by the University of Memphis, spotlighting the immense talent and passion of U of M students, alumni, faculty, and friends. From the heart of our hometown to the global stage, we celebrate the diverse voices and impactful contributions made by the U of M.
I'm Dr. Nguyen, Director of Bands at the Rudy E. Scheidt School of Music. Today, you are going to be inspired, entertained, and enlightened as I welcome Marie Douglas to the show. Douglas earned her Doctor of Musical Arts in Composition and a minor in Conducting from the University of Memphis. An Atlanta-bred composer, Douglas mixes and layers genres and textures as a means to interject unprecedented relatability and excitement into pieces intended for concert stages. This year alone, her works included world premieres with the University of Georgia Wind Ensemble and the United States Navy Band in Washington, D.C. for Soul Suite No. 1, a new piece for Wind Ensemble. Last year, Marie received a Grammy nomination for her work as an arranger on Sean Ardoin's album Full Circle. The Zydeco-based album features a historical collaboration with Louisiana State University's marching band. I've had the privilege of working with Marie Douglas during her time here at the U of M, and she is quite a remarkable human being. Welcome to the show, Marie.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm so blessed to be here. I feel honored.
Well, and I think that it is our honor. Being able to rub elbows with you the entire time that you've been here at this institution, and quite frankly, being inspired by the way that you view the world, has been a tremendous gift to me as one of your mentors. And I think faculty tend to forget that that's one of the things that can keep us rolling. You know, the daily grind can be pretty tough. And then having students like you walk in our doors and show your creativity, I mean, all of it has been really, really outstanding. So it is my absolute pleasure to be able to speak with you about this, for sure.
No, thank you so much, Doc. I mean, you've lent so much to me and poured into me. And then, like, even before I came, I was thinking to myself, I gotta get in the room with Albert Nguyen. And I was blessed to do that. So thanks for taking me under your wing and being willing to just kind of give me mentorship and guidance all these couple of years. And that seems like forever, but it's just been 2 years. But it's been that much information. It's been that much, exchanging of stuff. So I appreciate you, Doc.
Well, hey, it's not over. It's not over at all. We're connected forever, and that's the way that it
works. Can't get rid of me.
No, I don't plan to. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about you, your history for a second, right? I know we've just talked about you grew up in Atlanta, and I'd like to drill into a little bit about your life as a Black female musician in band in Atlanta and what you experienced. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Honestly, I didn't get a chance to be a musician until I was just about going into my 10th grade year. I went to school in Atlanta Public Schools growing up. I was finally able to join band in high school. And after some mishap in my schedule, and they gave me two of the same classes, and I was like thinking to myself, like, what am I going to do with this gift? Because and at that time, too, I was very much, I was inspired by, the streets and everything that was happening. So, my brother was somebody who was a known person in the neighborhoods, and I was always with him. And I was inspired by that, that whole life. And So when I found out about that my schedule was all messed up, I was just walking around, I spent about a week just walking around like, what am I going to do with this? You know, I'm probably just not going to tell these people. I'm just going to hang out. And then I wandered into the band room like one day at Southside High School, and I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting in the room with a couple of my friends who I know, they just happen to be in the band, but I'm not in the band, but I'm skipping in this class. And they're like, man, why don't you just get in band? And then the band director comes out of his office, he's like, who are you? And we went from there, you know. He told me, well, go at the class and tell him I told you, blah, blah, blah. He signed it. And the rest is history as far as me joining band. And you know, I was an athlete. I was playing ball and basketball and running track. And so it was like trying to balance all those different things. But band ended up winning, you know. It was just that captivating and inspiring for me. But some of the best things about just being a musician in the South is just that there's just so much African-American musical culture in the South. Period. So you've got HBCU bands, you've got church, you've got all these different things, Junkanoos in the Caribbean and second line bands in New Orleans, and it just kind of converges in Atlanta and makes this, you know, unique sounding, you know, band culture. But yeah, I've just been able to be inundated in it. Watching FAMU, my undergrad school in Tennessee State, which is right up here in Nashville, they used to have the Atlanta Classic every year in Atlanta. You probably heard of it. And those seeing those bands every year, you know, it was very inspiring because we would play in the parade. And they would give us tickets to the game. It was one year that Columbia High School, that's this really Loud Plains child band, like high school kids in DeKalb County, and they would just blow at FAMU and Tennessee State like they weren't colleges. But yeah, it's just the culture. Everything's converging on Peachtree Street at you know, you get to the Georgia Dome, and then it's just a battle with everybody. It's just so much fun. I learned a lot, and it helped me to eventually decide, okay, Marie, what are you going to do? You want to go to college? Yes. These are the things that got me into going to college. You know, but before that, I was just, so music, to answer your question, being a musician in Atlanta was the thing that gave me a visual of what the world outside of Atlanta could be. The world outside of 285, as they say, you know.
I'm just blown away. I'm blown away by the fact that the way that you are wired allowed you to soak up all of these different types of music and the culture that was around you. I mean, it's in your music. I've played a lot of your music, and it's true. I find it to be authentic. I find it to be inspiring, and to be really honest, it leads me down rabbit holes that I would never have been exposed to as a conductor, that's probably the best thing, right? You take your knowledge, and then you pull knowledge from the music that you're studying, and then where those crossroads come together is born more artistic expression. And then because I spend so much time like living it, studying it, it becomes a part of me. Like, I really do feel like outside of our relationship as mentor mentee, I know you
for sure
because of your music.
Absolutely.
And it's just so authentic. And so when we're talking about your playlist, right, the first one that's on your playlist was Outkast, I think. How did that music form you? How did it come together for you and build the Marie Douglas that we all have the privilege to listen to right now?
Outkast, that's like that's Atlanta's, you know, Wu-Tang Clan or Tribe Called Quest or, you know, any one of those, you know, prominent, you know, fundamental hip hop roots. And for me, Outkast was one of the first instances of like not really country sounding hip hop, but like they were expressing so many things in their music, and specifically the Rosa Parks version. You know, I think I was in like fourth grade or so when that came out, and we were just learning about Rosa Parks and stuff. So it's like, that kind of stuff was captivating to me and got me into them. But, you know, they kind of brought together, this is another, I'm going to overuse the word convergence today. Outkast is like a convergence of things. And it's kind of like one of those things that gave me true insight on how to artistically encapsulate the different layers of Black culture in America, especially in Atlanta. So you've got this church vibe that they have, this blues vibe that they have, and then of course the rap vibe. And the rap vibe is broken up into a couple of things. There are people who are identified with thug life in that group. Goody Mob, but Goody Mob comes from, I mean, Outkast comes from Goody Mob. And then you have Big Boi, who is, you know, he's the identification of maybe like thug life. And then you've got Andre 3000, who is like this poet, artist, you know. It's just these different facets of African-Americanness that they would bring to the table. And it taught me that I don't have to be this one type of thing that I saw on TV, you know, maybe that I saw on the news or whatever. I could probably be both of these people. I could be one of them. You know, it's just depends on how I'm feeling on any given day. But definitely for the rest of my life, I saw that from seeing Outkast for the first time, it was like, oh, wow, the duality of it all. I didn't know the word duality in 1990, whatever. But it showed me just these two sides of, you know, yin and yang kind of a Black cultural demonstration. And then their music though, Organized Noize. Rico Wade just passed away. Rest in peace, Rico Wade. But Organized Noize is their producers, and they have always been my favorite just because of, once again, the genres they will layer. They will tend to layer a ton of genres. You got anything you can think of from the African diaspora is being on display via Organized Noize. And yeah, so just between their producers and them themselves being this anomaly type of thing, or these unlikely pair, it was just inspiring for me to see them. And then, you know, Bottoms Over Bad Dad, all their songs, this is easy stuff to dance to around the house. You know, like, you get your first sessions in with your sisters, like, all right, y'all ready? You know, we finna break it down, you know. That's, you know, I was listening to Outkast and dancing around the house a lot, running up and down the stairs. You know, just, they're just a part of my childhood.
Well, it's great. What's even more wonderful, we're going to play it in just a sec, is that listeners get a look inside of your mind. Mm-hmm. I think it's one thing to listen to music, but then when you associate a piece of music with how it may have formed a person, and then you hear how they listen to that music,
yeah.
I hope that listeners now will hear this song in a much different way, because this is the way Maria Douglas heard it.
Absolutely.
And so we'll take a listen, and then we'll hopefully inspire people to see this music in a different light.
Sweet. All right, y'all, here is Rosa Parks by Outkast.
Type of people made the club before. Many a day has passed, the night has gone by, but still I find the time to put that bomb off in your eye. Total chaos for these playoffs. So we was amps and we're taking another route to represent the Dungeon family like Grey Day. Me and my decide to take the back way. We stabbing every city, then we headed to that back cave. ATL, Georgia, what do we do? Fall ya, bulldogging like them Georgetown Hawkins. Boy, you sign the silly thing. My room is sitting pretty, doing donuts. Run you suckers like them suckers around. It's damn, we the committee, gon' burn it down. But us gon' bust you in the mouth with the chorus now. Say, activate the left and right brain. Say, baby boy, your only phone can add your last cut. You focus on the past, your ass will be your has what. That's one to live by, or either that's one to die to. I try to just throw it at you. Determine your own adventure, Andre.
Got to a station, here's my destination. She got off the bus, the conversation lingered in my head for hours. Took a shower, kinda sour, cause my favorite group ain't coming with it. But I'm with you cause you're probably going through it anyway. But anyhow, went and died, went on out and bought it, cause I thought it would be jamming. But examine on the floss kit, walls get awfully sad and it's costly, but that's all shit. Bro, and I hope I never have to float in that boat. Up creek, it's sweet, it's the last quote that I wanna hear when I'm going down. When all said and done and we got a new Joe in town. When the record player get to skipping and slowing down, all y'all can say is them niggas earn that crown. But until then,
song right there. I love that song. Definitely. When that song came out, I was going to Andre 3000's church.
What?
Yes, we were always around. Like, my sister had us at Big Boy House all the time. That's the other member of Outkast. We were always at his house, you know. I would be at his house with all these daggone pit bulls, and I'd be thinking, like, man, I just want to go in and tell them that I want to do music so bad. And I just didn't want to, you know, you're a girl. This is your question. You're a black woman and you're just like, these are not looking like something you can just do. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not, I was looking up to a lot of black musicians that were male, not female. So to sit there, I'm sitting here right, you know, in the midst of all this and
that's
scared to ask, scared to let them know.
To some degree, I'm devastated to hear you say that, you know, because I think about, it leads me to think about how much courage it might have taken for you to do what you're doing right now, right? And so maybe I wonder if there was a moment, because I'm envisioning you right now, high school, you just accidentally fell into the band room, right? So, and previously to this, did you have any musical training? Like, were you officially, so you couldn't read music, you didn't play an instrument.
Not yet.
You just knew that you just needed a place to be. You showed up in the band room and a band director grabbed you, and then I just have to take a breath here, try to figure out how all this came together. But then from there, you decided that you wanted to do this thing, become a composer, and then all of a sudden become famous. So there's got to be a moment, right? Sort of this, maybe and maybe not, or a series of moments where you had to find the strength. Can you talk about that? Were there moments? Was there one moment?
There wasn't one moment at all. There was the moment probably was when my director, the director that recruited me at Southside, he ended up going to another school, and we got another director named Ryan Linson. And he's really, you know, integral to me even having courage to step out and do things like this. You know, band is a male-dominated scenario if you're not like a dancer or something like that, or auxiliary member of the guard. So he you know, put me down and be like, listen, try out for Germany. Okay. Of course, when I first got to Southside and I saw the band, they had a female drum major. She was really short. She reminded me of myself. And so I was inspired by that. And so I was like thinking to myself, well, I would really like to be drum major one day. And then he said, try for drum major. So I tried for drum major. And there are tons of guys that could have, should have gotten it probably. But he chose me. And that's like the chance I feel like I was given to like lead and do things and not be afraid. The following year, he ended up going to another school. And then the next director we got was just, mind you, like I said, this was in the middle of what we call Zone 3 in Atlanta. So it's not, it's going to be a tumultuous band scenario. Now that I'm an educator, I know that what causes those things. But so he left, and the next vendor we had, he was an awesome guy, but things just weren't, there was some sort of disconnect where the students weren't having it. We were sick of losing our directors. And so me and my friend Thomas Regular had to run the band. He did the drills, I did the arrangements. And this is when I got into, you know, really writing for my friends and writing for band and just not being able to being afraid to go out on a limb. The thing that gave me the most courage though was when I went to FAMU camp. All of us had to go to FAMU camp every year if you're gonna be a leader in band. And FAMU is Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida, if you don't know what that is. Those of y'all that are listening. But we had to go to that camp, and when I saw FAMU's leadership team playing and heard how much sound they could produce, which was the same amount of people I had in the band at the time, like, as you know, probably about 30 people in the band at Southside at the time. I was like, oh, we can do that at Southside, and dang, it sounds good. And look at all these men. Like, I was inspired. I was ready to go, and like, you know, it was a bunch of well-to-do folks, and I was like, wow, this is my place. And so it gave me the courage to go against the grain of the community I was in and, you know, do something as a woman, stepping out, like I said, and I was really one of the few people that did it as a female, you know, so it was very tough, and I did need inspiration, and I was grateful for folks like Mr. Lindsay and Mr. Harris my senior year, and then FAMU embraced me wholeheartedly, and it was just great.
You did this as a student?
Yes.
Wow. That's really, really terrific. So then, how does Duke Ellington play into your life?
Duke Ellington, you know, he's just the greatest there is, you know. I think that Duke Ellington is the best American composer that there has been to walk the planet. I mean, it's a lot of folks that I would say, like Aaron Copland, I think he's really awesome too. But Duke Ellington is like, as far as where he's pulling these things and putting them on paper, I think he was pretty, like, epic. And so he's an inspiration for me to even try this composition thing, you know, hearing somebody pull elements of their culture into this symphonic setting. It's a blatant thing, you know, but I'm getting my sister's home. It's a blatant scenario of what I'm trying to do, and that's put the culture on symphonically, put it on in a classical realm.
That's wonderful. Well, let's just have a listen. Okay. Tell us what we're listening to.
Okay. Y'all enjoy Duke Ellington's Black, Brown, and Beige Suite.
Thank you.
I absolutely love how that piece opens. I mean, I didn't know it before you brought it up, and for it to start with the drums like that, and then the rest of the jazz band comes in so strongly, it's intense and nice and dramatic. Yeah.
Yes, it is dramatic. And what I love is his, you know, like I was mentioning, his translation of the swing sound to the symphonic sound. It's not very much of a difference, which for me, I feel like that's the thing, like that's the hook, line, and sinker of it all. Like, he's convincing people who initially thought, you know, well, you know, this will never work, or we don't need those sounds in this idiom, that these sounds work perfectly in this idiom. You know, it's just taking a big band and putting it in a symphonic setting. So, you know, I appreciate his work with that. And in general, that the big sound, like he's got people screaming, playing in the upper register on trumpet. I mean, these are things that you would see in street bands, you know, and him putting it into an orchestral setting, I think is just brilliant. So his work with all his pieces, that one included, is just genius work.
You know, one of the things that I, again, appreciate about your music is that you forced me as a conductor to study it differently. I mean, I remember when you sent me Soul Sweets, and you're like, here, take a look at this and see what you think. And I listened to it for the first time, and I thought, well, this is interesting, but I don't know what to make of it, right? And it's because I was trained in this Western tradition of art music, you know? And then what I realized was what I am trying to do is study your music through the training that I have, which actually doesn't apply. It's the wrong math, right? And you remember, I called you, and you're like, okay, I need you to help me figure out how to connect this. And do you remember that conversation?
Yes, I mean, but what you and I came to in that conversation was that it doesn't need to be, you know, we need to look at this totally different, you know, and we also came to the conclusion of, wow, your music just sounds nothing like anything ever. And it's like you said, just the birthing of a whole new sound comes of these scenarios. But I was glad to explain to you the chopped and screwedness of it, and you know, the different elements that create a big sound cluster on a what I was imitating. So like imitating the, really just a track, a hip hop track with no vocals on it at the beginning. That is something that everybody's at the same volume almost, like, as opposed to when we're sitting in an ensemble playing, listening to music, and there is a blatant hierarchy of a melody and all these different things. So it just, us talking about it on the phone just helped me to secure myself as, in just every conversation we have, it helps me be fine with just completely going against the grain and saying, yeah, I know that this is supposed to be a melody or people like to hear melodies, but yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, yeah. Et cetera.
Right, right. Well, the idea that I think when you even said it, this is a DJ switching beats back and forth. And then when that idea was rooted in my mind, it finally allowed me to get to the essence of your music.
Yeah.
And I think being exposed to your music, that's what really gets me, is that you have forced me to change my paradigm.
Mm.
And then I think what that, hopefully you think that that's what happened, is that it allows that music to be, your music to be more authentically you. And I'm not trying to subject my learning and my will upon that so much, which I think is kind of cool. There's a freedom to it because of that.
And it could have gone the opposite way. Like, yeah, I'm pretty rebellious by nature, but I'm also like your typical Southern girl, like falling in line, doing what I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm not,
I'm
a really, you know, well-behaved person. So, you know, I could have studied with anybody and they could have said, you know, Marie, I want you to make this sound more normal, et cetera. But, you know, you didn't do that. You didn't comment on my stuff and say, oh, this just isn't normal enough, or this isn't this enough. So I appreciate, like you said, the freedom of it.
Well, I'm happy to be able to support that anytime you want.
Yeah.
So next on your list was Erykah Badu. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about her music and your thoughts on how this fits into your life.
Well, I first heard Erykah Badu's music. My auntie introduced us to her sound back in the mid-90s. You know, my family is really responsible for curating my musical taste, of course, but they have pretty broad musical taste, and so we will have something every weekend. My house is a party every weekend. On schedule. Friday night is on. And so my auntie came over and she had the CD, and Erykah Badu's first CD. She played Call Tyrone. And that's when it was like a wrap. That's when I started being like, oh man, this woman is crazy. Like, she's calling this man out on his stuff. I love it. And then I don't know if it's the first CD or not, but to me it was my first time hearing. But yeah, so Call Tyrone happened, and then, but this song is not Call Tyrone. You know, it's the song that we're gonna play here. It speaks to my style. When I listen to Erykah Badu, she tends to have these suites, like these songs that flow into different fields. she'll start out on, you know, maybe some minimalist drumming and just be singing over it. And then that drumming will advance into something else. And it just, like, her music morphs in 4 minutes. Like, it doesn't even take that long. I mean, the next piece is going to take pretty decent amount of time. But in general, all her songs aren't long as hell. They're maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and they have these different facets to them. So I really appreciate that about her. And that her, that style influenced my style, as far as it made me realize what I think my voice is, which is more of a DJ who just happens to, like, write out the stuff on paper. But, like, so she'll have what I have come to call soul sweep. Like, between a beat switch, anybody's hip hop beat switch, or Erykah Badu doing, or Jill Scott does it too, but I just didn't have no more space on this playlist. But they have these songs that just kind of switch up and go into, you know, all these different fields, and you could be on one end of the world and then you'll be on the next end. So that's just, I love her creativity and just able to go through sounds. It's just been something that's been influencing me since my auntie brought that song, that album over that day.
Well, thank you for your auntie.
Yeah, Auntie KK. Well, she passed away recently, but I do, you know, I appreciate her influence on me. I think I have her laugh a little bit too, so yeah.
So tell us what we're going to listen to.
Y'all enjoy Green Eyes by Erykah Badu.
Da da da. to trick me, yeah.
Oh my goodness. I didn't even think about this, but like starting with the record player, it's that time machine. I feel like we're going back into time.
Yeah.
And then she just takes us on this wonderful journey.
You're so right to say that. So like it does kind of, and that I don't really know for sure. All I know is what she says as far as the interpretation of her lyrics. But the musical content, I observed the same thing. I felt like it was a time machine going from, you know, kind of this, it starts in this like jazz waltz, but it's got this old feel to it. It's got the tape filter over it, you know, and then you go into her grief with Andre 3000 about, you know, him not really being a faithful partner to her. You know, it's just, it goes all, it's just so much. I have a whole paper on it that I wrote, and one day I'll put that out there and tell everybody about it. But, you know, yes, she's gone through the five stages of grief as far as when I was researching, and then listening to it, you clearly hear different styles of jazz, like, for every section. It's just, it's really genius. Like, whoever she sits around and talks with and to come up with her music, or if she's sitting by herself, then she's just awesome. She's just amazing.
You know, you're such a student, right? You're like, that's, I don't mean to say it that way. You have a growth mindset that is kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, it doesn't stop.
And you're that way in your lessons, and you did a research project on a song just because. And I find that really, really fascinating. So when you're looking at Monica and Monica's music, what type of rabbit holes did that lead you down? And let's talk about that. How did that change Marie Douglas?
Monica is like, Monica is probably one of my archetypes, like one of those personalities you see growing up that you know, were fascinated with and you were modeling yourself after as a girl. It's like between Monica and Aaliyah when I was a kid. That's who I was, you know, wearing my hair over my eye, being that roundaway girl that's hanging out with everybody. But Monica, when she came out with Street Symphony, that album was just crazy. And for me, like, once again, back to the topic of just being an African-American woman trying to do music one day. So the video would come on and you would see all these members of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. And I didn't know they were Atlanta Symphony Orchestra per se. Like, I knew they were, but I didn't know them by recognition. Like, oh, dude, I know them. It was like, oh, wow, she's in this video. And it's symphony members. And, like, you know, you're just stunned. And so that's what that, you know, that was one of those songs that made me think, yeah, Marie, you could do that. You could do something with it. And I remember always getting very emotional hearing that song growing up, like hearing it start to come on. And it came on, like, that whole album is really respectable. She does like a cover of, I think it's called Misty, you know, the jazz chart. And, you know, she did a lot of, you know, things on that album that just paid homage to those before her. So I really appreciated her versatility, you know. And it was something like this versatility from her and from so many other Black artists is what led to me to who I think I am today. Like, just a natural decision to just kind of include as many genres as I can in what I do.
Great. So tell us what we're listening to next.
Oh man, this is one of my favorites right here. Monica, Street Symphony.
I absolutely love how the producer brought in all of the string musicians for that and then just adding the beat behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it's great.
That was Austin. Yeah, he went to Tennessee State, the HBCU guy. And you know, Jalis Austin's one of those integral folks too. Like, that was, I was a, you know, kid. I was real aware growing up listening to all these folks, you know, everything that happened from the Atlanta Olympics to everybody that was a, coming and making it out of Atlanta. It was all really influential. And he's one of those folks that was awesome to produce it. But like you said, putting that the strings on top of the beat, like that's me. That's me right there. That's definitely, you know, probably this Street Symphony song out of every song on this playlist, that's the most Marie. You know, that's the most, and you know, telling of who I am and where I was most inspired. That song probably inspired me more than any other song I heard growing up, just because of that stacking of the genres.
Well, you know, just out of curiosity, I mean, you successfully defended your dissertation. Yeah. You are now Dr. Marie Douglas.
Doctor.
It was my privilege to be on your committee, and you wrote your first orchestral work. Did any of that show up? Did any of Monica's music show up, or was it a complete departure?
Not necessarily a complete departure at all. It was definitely, there's about two sections inside of there where I just overgive beats and, you know, just using the strings and strings as the beat. It's more so the elaboration or the continuation of what maybe somebody like Dallas Austin was doing on that track, whereas the beat kind of kept the same, and the strings are a part of the beat, but it's more melodic. You know, what I was doing on my dissertation, I was making the strings kind of drums themselves at times. Like, that's just kind of like what I like doing, reversing the role, you know, making the percussion play some melodic stuff while the strings are the beat, or no percussion at all, and letting the strings or the winds or whomever the ensemble is outside of percussion. Voices, ask the Army Soldier Chorus, they'll tell you they were the beat. You know, like, anybody can be the beat for me. So, like, definitely what Monica did in this instance, she gave me the courage to kind of go and even try to mess with strings.
Very nice. Well, let's talk about role reversal for a second.
Please.
I mean, you spend this entire time just gushing about people that you admire and people that have been your role models. You do realize that you are now a role model for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
You don't know it, and you're just so humble about it. You want to talk about how that feels? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah, on the spot. I mean, yes, I do realize that a lot of folks will look up to me, especially young ladies, and I'm honored to be that for them. I hope the best thing that I can give them is just to kind of just be themselves, and because you're not in bed to help it anyway. No matter how hard you try, it's going to come out somewhere in your life. But yeah, I'm just hoping that people of all backgrounds will feel encouraged to just pursue that thing, whatever it is that they, you know, that they really want to do. And since I was a little girl, I wanted to mess with music and be some kind of entertainer in some kind of way. And it's starting to finally come together. I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about coming together, one of the songs on your list is sort of a coming together of a whole lot of people, right? We've got Killer Mike, Andre 3000, Future, Aaron Allen Kane. Let's talk a little bit about that overall collaboration.
Well, Aaron Allen Kane is kind of new to my radar, but she's an amazing singer. And she's all over Killer Mike's Grammy-winning album, Michael. He's used her quite a bit, but Future and Andre 3000 and Killer Mike are all members of the Dungeon family, and they all have been extremely, you know, influential to my life. The Dungeon family is probably like all the Outkast, Dungeon family, Organized Noise, like, those are my favorite musicians, hip hop musicians growing up. And so Killer Mike let out an amazing album last year called Michael, and you know, I remember turning on in the car, and the first track I heard is CeeLo Green going crazy on it. It's just, oh my lord, it took me back to being a little girl and just, you know, loving that sound. And then Andre 3000 on this song, you know, Andre 3000, first of all, was like a hermit. Like, in general, he lives his life out of the spotlight, even though everybody wants him in it. And he recently let out like a flute album. You probably heard of it. And, you know, so to see him pop up on this Scientists and Engineers track and spit an amazing verse that was introspective and, you know, metaphorical over your head, you know, it was just a breath of fresh air to hear him again. And of course, Future is like a muse of mine. You know, we have a similar like background. You know, he's from the east side of Atlanta. Kirkwood, to be exact, and you know, he's a guy who I can, he's like a person I grew up with, and as in I can tell exactly what he's talking about all the time, because that's the kind of people I grew up around and the kind of boys I was dating and, you know, et cetera. So, you know, he's one of my muses.
Well, that's wonderful. So tell us what we're going to hear here.
All right, y'all. Enjoy Scientists and Engineers.
Stay in the rain. Washing up my feet.
Washing on my feet.
It's been the same. It's been one time, it's been again. Go back up to an angel. Water dribbling in my head.